There's been times when it only takes 50 ounces of gold or 100 ounces of gold to buy the median home price in the States. That's a good trade. Sell gold, buy real estate. If it's too high, it's over 200 being, think about the average. Well, real estate's maybe a little too high compared to something else like a commodity gold.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Robert Gooden is a good old boy from Tennessee who believes in the golden rule, like his YouTube report, Golden Rule Radio. Robert, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Sam. Glad to be here.
Pleasure's mine. Same three questions I ask every guest who comes on the show in 90 seconds or less. Can you tell me, where did you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there?
Yep. So I grew up in Tennessee, rural Tennessee, outside of Chattanooga. Had a family who had some businesses. They were in the boat dock business, Center Hill Lake, Dale Hollow Lake, Fontana, back in the 50s, 60s, 70s. So my mom grew up doing that, running the businesses with my grandfather. And so I kind of always had an eye for trying to recognize opportunity, you know, what makes sense in a business sense and societal sense, and then what doesn't make sense, when to not say something does work. Went to college at Suwannee, University of the South, got exposed to some of the, you know, older money crowd. And my grandfather had always said, you know, those types of people can employ you. They can give you opportunity. And it was about the people, not the education that I was going to get there, because it was totally different than what I expected walking in there. And so I recognized that he was a smart dude and he always said, go west. There's opportunity out west. I ended up right out of college, worked for SunTrust Bank, did some mortgages, stuff like that for a couple of years. And then through a family that I went to college with, they had an opportunity here in Durango, Colorado. I quit my job cold turkey at the bank, didn't know what I was going to do, but I packed up my car, left Tennessee, headed out west, ended up in Durango, Colorado, and started working for them, met some more of the right people, and I've been doing precious metals for the last 15 years. I work for the McIlvany family. They're the oldest continuously owned and operated precious metals dealer in the States. The founder helped get gold legalized in the 70s. So I work for a neat family. And my side hustle, real estate. So I was at the real estate conference there, the best ever conference, met you a few years ago, Sam, and saw you again not too long ago. So been doing side hustle real estate deals, started small, scaling up. And, you know, I sell precious metals as a career, but the real estate things worked out well. Colorado real estate's been good to me.
That's awesome. I love your story there. There's so much to pull out of that. The one thing that I like what you said, which if you though that you're listening that don't know about Suwannee, it's probably one of the prettiest campuses I think that exists here in the States. That's a gorgeous campus there in East Tennessee. But you know, it is about, I think, building your network. And I think that's a repeating theme I hear on this show. It's not, you know, the kind of overused phrase is not what, it's who you know, but it is putting yourself in those situations. And I think that's something that you just do over and over, right? I mean, it didn't end when you went to Suwannee. You had to continuously, and you still do, put yourself in the right environment in order to grow.
That's right. Yeah, I think it is about the people. It's kind of like the saying, don't marry for money, but look for love among the wealthy.
I've not heard that. That's pretty good.
You know, so my grandfather encouraged me to get involved with people, you know, who had businesses and learn from them.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely, absolutely true. Tell me, you know, a little bit about, let's talk about gold and precious metals for a minute. I don't want to stay here, you know, for too long, but certainly want to hear, you know, what it is that you do, what you're seeing in the market, why people are going to gold. Just give us your overall market sentiments, because this is not something that I know that much about and certainly don't specialize in it day to day.
Sure. I think the interplay between the dollar being what everybody considers as liquidity and capital, and gold, I consider gold capital. I go between gold and real estate. The US dollar index right now hit the highest level a few days ago. since 2003. And it sure doesn't feel like the dollar is strong if you go to the store and buy something.
Right.
But there's weakness in Europe specifically that has been driving the dollar index way up. And I think it's a better form of measurement to measure the dollar price in some commodity like gold instead of looking at the dollar index, because the dollar index is at a high that it hasn't been. There was a high in 2020 and during COVID because the dollar was a liquidity. It was the safe haven currency. There was a high in 2017, but the dollar poked just above that and it hadn't been that high since 2003 on the index.
Right.
Well, obviously you don't feel that buying something and being a consumer here in the States, but the dollar index is at a high. And the last two times that the dollar index was at a high, 2017, gold was around 1200, 12 to 1300. Then again in 2020, hit a high again around where it is right now. And gold was in the 1600, 1650. Today, gold's around 1900. So you've got gold kind of stair-stepping higher. And I think that's a better barometer for how powerful the dollar actually is. So I see gold as a safe haven going forward, especially. And it is, there's some overlap between the real estate market and gold and silver, because you can do precious metals in your self-directed IRA. So it's one of the reasons we were at the Best Ever Conference is, you know, that group already, a lot of them have self-directed IRAs that they're doing real estate deals. Well, you can do precious metals in there as well. So there's a lot of overlap there. And it's a mindset of a tangible asset. You know, gold is basically real estate that you can move, hide, and trade and liquidate. Liquidity is a big, big thing, I think, in today's market.
Yeah. And certainly, you know, traditionally gold has been held as an inflation, you know, as a hedge against inflation. So, you know, seeing that, and I love the idea. I've not heard anybody talk about that yet, about comparing gold to the dollar index, because you're absolutely right. None of us are going to the gas pump or the grocery store and paying $5 or $6 a gallon for diesel or gas, and then, you know, paying 25% and 30% more for the same product and going, yeah, my dollar's buying a lot more. Clearly our dollar's not buying more. And so that's a really intriguing kind of interplay between.
Yeah, I think it's about what you measure it against, you know, measuring anything against anything. There's kind of a relationship between gold and the average price of a home in America, where it takes average 200 ounces of gold to buy the average house. So I'm not just measuring it in price of the home or price of the piece of property. If you look at certain times and period over time, there's been times when it only takes 50 ounces of gold or 100 ounces of gold to buy the median home price in the States. That's a good trade. Sell gold, buy real estate. If it's too high, it's over 200 being, I think, about the average. Well, real estate's maybe a little too high compared to something else like a commodity gold. So it's a way to measure something. We do that with gold and silver. We look for which one is undervalued or overvalued at any time. And there's a relationship that they have that there's a consistent range that you can actually trade. But anyway, let's jump to real estate if you want to. I don't know where you...
I certainly do. I got one last question for you in the precious metals markets. Where do you think today, which we're recording this, and obviously this can change even by the time this goes live, that today is May 3rd, 2022, when we're recording this, what is the value play right now in precious metals? Is it gold, silver, palladium? What is it?
Yep. I would say silver and platinum. Silver is about half of its all-time high. What other commodity is half of its all-time high? Most of the other commodities are at all-time highs.
Right.
So silver has a range that it's previously traded that it could double from here and just be pushing back to an all-time high. I think it's ultimately going to a higher all-time high, but silver's good value. Platinum is about half the price of gold. Platinum is 5 to 10 times rarer than gold. About 12% of its supply comes from Russia, which could put some strain on the price of platinum. And so platinum's usually about 1 to 1 or even higher than the price of gold. So selling at a 50% discount to gold, I think platinum will ultimately have the day in the sun, being a number of thousands of dollars an ounce. And right now it's below 1,000. With that said, I also like gold as kind of the ballast of the ship.
Right.
Gold is less volatile than the other industrial metals, like silver and platinum have a lot of demand from the industrial side. So I'd say that gold still makes sense. Countries buy gold. Central banks are buying gold. They turn to net buyers of gold. So I like to have a mix, because at certain times, one could fluctuate dramatically to the other one, and I would maybe sell ounces of gold to buy silver, or vice versa. But silver and platinum are definitely your underappreciated priced assets right now in the metals.
Awesome. I love it. Thanks for taking the time to break down your industry expertise there in the precious metals markets. Appreciate that. Let's talk about real estate. What's a deal you're involved in right now? Kind of just give us a case study on one of those.
Sure. I started small and I was patient, probably shouldn't have been. Being in Colorado in 2007, you could have bought anything from between 2007 and 2020, and it was a good value. Mm. But I got my buddy, who's a partner of mine, to set me up with a list of all the properties that are coming to the market. As soon as they get posted, I get an email. And I would just scour through those, look for what's out there, because you've got to know your market to be able to identify value.
Sure.
And so I waited years, but I was looking at every single thing coming on the market. And I didn't just set the range tightly of what I could afford. I set the range pretty wide, because certain properties may be way out of your reach in terms of just being able to buy it and make it work and be profitable and produce income. But there may be something to that property that's out of your reach where you do want to go use debt and actually make it work, because you've got these added value things on there. So I was too patient at first in 2007 to about 2010, but I wanted to really look at what, being able to identify value, what is the value? So I scoured through all the properties coming on the market for a while before I really selected something that made sense. Cause then I knew that I was buying value. I knew what else was out there.
Right. Right. What were you buying?
Single family home at first, but also before that, buying land, raw land, kind of just underappreciated, and land that, you know, I could buy at a lower value than what I thought it was worth. And ultimately, a lot of those pieces were not marketed well. Mm-hmm. It was kind of finding a crappy realtor who didn't know what they were doing and buying land and then turning around and selling it. So I think my first deal was like, I paid like 16 grand cash for a deal. 6 weeks later, I sold it for 64. So, you know, since then I've done similar things and it's worked out. I hadn't lost money with it. And, you know, we're about to cash out on one, and we've been looking for opportunity again, the same way, looking across the board, find a piece that's valuable, you know, underappreciated, but valuable. And there's just nothing there, Sam. I mean, we've looked at within 3 or 4 or 5 hours from where we are, and we're probably not going to 1031 exchange because there's just nothing there to buy.
Mm. When you say there's nothing there to buy, you're saying that there's
no good value.
And are you, you're saying in the land market around where you
land,
are?
Specifically, right. Land. Yeah. Right.
Were you guys taking that and subdividing that and selling them off as parcels? What was your strategy?
Some doing that, as well as just flipping it. And I know that that kind of goes against a lot of maybe what some people are familiar with, being able to flip land for a profit.
Right.
But yeah, subdividing was also key in the profitability.
Yeah. I mean, what are you guys, and I've had a couple, you know, intense land investors on the show, and we've gone into depth, so I can certainly try to find and put those episodes in. But put those episodes in the show notes. But what were you doing? Because it does kind of go against the grain. If you came to me and said, hey man, here's a piece of land that's been on the market for a year and it's not sold, but I want to buy it and sell it for a lot more, I'd be like, no, right. I'm not in. What did you do differently?
It was poorly marketed. That was really it. Getting really good pictures, talking about elevation, like specifics that added a little bit of value to somebody just looking across the board and seeing it. But mostly the splitting of land was the profitable one.
Who was the end buyer on when you started?
Ah, yeah. Good question, because that is key. They were people who couldn't afford to get a standard bank loan. Mm. So a lot of it was, we bought it, split it, and owner financed. So we carried the note And that allowed somebody to get into some place that they could camper, drop a mobile home, and looked at doing some mobile home parks. A lot of them were just overpriced, but a small scale of that was allowing somebody to not have to put 25-35% down. We'd take 10-15% down and owner finance it. And then, you know, a year or two later, we'd sell the note, full face value note, and move on. Also, it helped them to get traditional financing. So my parents did that a little bit in Tennessee with renters. They would help the renter, you know, improve their credit score and get to the point where they can actually buy. And so you're adding value to somebody who can't get into a property because they just can't afford it.
Right. Right. Or they just, or they just for whatever reason, don't have the
skill set
or they're not lendable from a bank standpoint.
Correct.
Right. And I think that's a great way. Certainly done plenty of that as well.
And it was about the people. I mean, we did look through who we were going to be lending to instead of just taking whoever's out there.
Sure.
Because good people just need a lift up a little bit.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Done plenty of that where you have people that, you know, making six figures a year, but have made some mistakes a few years before and they just can't get bank financing.
That's right.
Those have been excellent, excellent products where you're like, okay, put your money down and they pay on time and it's great. Who did you who's an end buyer of notes on things like that, on land?
We knew a few people.
Okay.
Who were willing to buy it. And one thing I learned in that process is to always have a prepayment penalty because a buyer doesn't necessarily want to get into the due diligence of looking at buying the note. And then they buy the note and then they get bought off. You know, the borrower pays the thing off the next month. They didn't collect anything. They did a lot of due diligence. And so the prepayment penalty was key in actually finding a solid buyer. That was something we learned in the process.
Yeah. Were there any other surprises along the way, maybe that you've learned in your real estate investing?
It's about the right people. And I mean, that's one of the reasons that I think you and I became friends, I'll call it that, is, you know, you can kind of tell when somebody has your interest involved,
right,
or in mind. And, you know, we named our YouTube show Golden Rule Radio after treating somebody how you want to be treated.
Right.
And it's about the people, whether it's somebody who is your client, whether it's some partner, whether it's, you know, the person you're lending to, it had to be the right fit.
That's great.
Fortunately.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But no, I think you're spot on. I mean, that's the thing we talk about all the time here is when you're a passive investor, especially, it's got to be the know, like, and trust factor. And if that's not there, then like, what are we absolutely doing? Tell me, give me your thoughts on using debt and leverage. I mean, you're a precious metals guy that typically puts you in a more risk averse category, right?
Sure.
You kind of aren't running mainstream with everybody else. And so that would probably, in my opinion, lend itself to not being in love with debt like the rest of us real estate sickos are. Is that a fair assumption or what are your thoughts on that?
One of the main reasons that I haven't been using debt is my partner doesn't like debt.
Okay.
I'm okay with it, if it makes sense. I like fixed rates rather than variable, especially with the interest rate environment I think we're going to see over the next 5 to 10 years. You know, Fed chairman's talking very similarly about how Paul Volcker back in the early 80s raised interest rates to curb inflation. Well, the current Fed president, he knows who butters his bread. And I think there's maybe not as much interest rate hikes coming as maybe they think, but that's a whole nother conversation. I'm okay with debt, fixed rate. I like it, but my partner doesn't want debt.
Doesn't want debt. I mean, what are some of his maybe? I mean, because obviously you agree with him because you continue to invest with him. So, what are some of the thinkings that you get that you're in alignment with? Why you say, hey, you know what? I'm good not using debt as well.
Yeah, you know, with land deals, I think there's a lot more risk than something that's an income producing property with what you're doing, Sam. Hmm. I really like what you're doing, you know, because you've got kind of an already formed business model,
right?
You know kind of what to expect, like where you can add value, where you can improve the bottom line. Land deals, you're not going to produce income like you would with your deals. So there's a lot more risk there getting stuck with the property, we didn't want to be making payments on these land deals if we couldn't move it. So different category, I'd say, in the real estate market that actually made us kind of be more of a cash buyer rather than borrowing on it. I have used debt. I bought a vacation rental 2020, right before COVID hit. And it was a value add type of property, completely renovated it. It's paying for itself. We're using it about half the year, paying for itself. And I've been offered double what I bought it for. So I like that. I looked at borrowing on another unit this week, and you know, the terms on it were mainly almost 6%, just a longer term rental. And so rates have definitely affected things.
Right.
And are going to continue. So it has to make sense. You've got to be a numbers guy like you are to make that debt work for you and know what you can expect to be able to pay.
That's it.
Have your margin.
I was talking to an investor, not just before this call, and he called me and he's like, hey, you know, we're having a big cash out on the sale of one property, buying something else. So I'm going to have cash from that. He goes, but on the new acquisition, do I use cash to buy it? Do I put a HELOC on that property? It's a small farm homestead property. He's like, man, or do I get long-term fixed rate? You know, which way do I, and we kind of just went through the mechanics of all of it. And I'm like, I'm not comfortable with the interest rate risk right now. You put a HELOC on a property and maybe it's $500,000 or $1 million property, and we hit 16, 18% interest like the early 80s. Whoa, that's a tough nut to cover every single year. And I doubt you're going to be able to do that on $1 million property.
That's right.
Yeah. I mean, so that, like you said, you know, it cuts both ways. That's a beautiful thing when properly structured, but improperly structured, it can really, really absolutely hurt you.
I've used variable rate, you know, a fluctuating rate debt, HELOC. I've got those set up to be able to use those for a short amount of time. Like, I know when I'm going to be able to pay that back.
Right.
Versus something that I'm going to buy and hold for a while. I'm good with the fixed rate, and I'll pay a higher rate even on a fixed rate, something like that.
Yep. No, couldn't agree more with you. One last question here, Robert, before we sign off. Certainly appreciate you taking the time to break down the precious metals markets for us. Tell us, you know, about your land investing in short-term rentals, your thoughts there on debt, and, you know, what, you know, I guess the other cool piece you brought to the table was the U.S. dollar index and how maybe that's a false indicator of what the dollar is actually worth. I hadn't heard that before, and certainly also really enjoyed that, and just love what you've done in real estate and the precious metals markets. If there were a piece of advice that you've received from a mentor over the years, you'd say, man, that's the best piece of advice I've received. Any idea what that piece of advice would be?
There's two types of people in the world. One pays interest, one earns interest. So, you know, you can relate that to debt, or you could relate it to the deals you're doing, which you know what you're going to earn from it. You know, you've got some variables, but you do have the numbers down. I like what you've sent me in the past. You have the numbers down, and that's what matters. So you're either going to be paying interest and not earning, or paying interest and having a margin. And that's what I think you're about with your deals. I like it.
Awesome. That's cool, man. Robert, appreciate you coming on the show today. If the listeners want to learn more about you, what is the best way to do that?
They could email me, Robert@McIlvany.com. It's McIlvany. The YouTube show that I do that posts every Thursday is called Golden Rule Radio. It's on the McIlvany Financial channel on YouTube. That comes out every Thursday. It's about 10 minutes, metals market specific. But email or call. My direct line is 855-638-5616.
Awesome. Robert, thank you for your time today. I do appreciate it.
Thanks, Sam. My pleasure.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.